Hello and welcome to Lead a Horse to Water, the equine training and behaviour podcast. I'm your host, Trudy Dempsey. You can find all my information at trudydempsey.card.co. There you'll find links to all my social media and my upcoming courses. That's Trudy Dempsey, all one word, .card, C-A-R-R-D, .co, C-O. On with the podcast. Hello, everybody. And first of all, a massive apology for not having podcasts for so long. It absolutely wasn't my intention. And I have had so many things that I want to talk about. And maybe I'll touch base on a couple of those today. But I'll be back into the rhythm of podcasting more regularly again now. As I sit recording this, I am looking out over the sea from my temporary residence. And we have moved home. We've moved out of home and into temporary rental and are waiting for our property that will hopefully come good in the new year sometime. Be nice if it's January, but builders, I'm not sure. Could be February, March time. The good news for me is that that's going to mean I'm a lot closer to Sue's. Totally unintended, as much as I would love and am going to love being closer to Sue's. Our intention originally was to go to Wales. Let's cut back a little bit, actually. Before that, we had no intention of moving at all. I have some fabulous clients in South Somerset and I really enjoyed living there and we plan to live there for a long time, well into full retirement. But life doesn't always run smoothly and we had some problems, as so often, human-based problems which we've had to deal with, and so it wasn't really ideal. It's been fairly difficult last few months, but I have my head above water now and here we are, beginning the rest of our lives. And what it's meant for me is that I can think about now a semi-retirement, very semi. So shall we call it a demi-semi? Because I'm going to do a little bit less. I'm going to take a lot more time for myself and do some things from home. I probably won't take on so many individual clients when we move to North Devon, because that's where I'm going to be, on the coast in North Devon. And so for me, it will be more about concentrating on courses and providing support for students that way. And the odd, if I get the right student and I feel comfortable working with them, then yeah, I will take on some students in North Devon as well. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to these few months where we don't actually have a home and all the things, maintenance and regular life that comes along with that. So again, hopefully I'm going to be able to get started with some more writing. So it's quite exciting. Apologies, as I say, for not having been around podcasting, and I was feeling a little rusty. It's so long since I've hit the record button. Hopefully going forwards, I'm going to get all the guests that I had got lined up for podcasting. I'm going to be nudging you if you've said yes, and we'll try and get you onto the podcast, certainly in the new year of 23. I'm going to go on now and talk a little bit about some of the things that have come up for me, and then I'm going to answer a couple of questions that I think are really interesting. Might have looked at them a little bit before in other podcasts, but that's absolutely fine, because every time I talk about something, it comes, new stuff comes out of my head, and my recent experience might be different to when I recorded last time. So I have a couple of questions that you guys very kindly sent to me when I put out the plea for any questions. So that would be what I'm really concentrating on in this podcast. But I also wanted to skip back a little bit, because I haven't actually podcast since Suze and I were at Understand Horses, and since I was in Norfolk in September primarily to run a few days for charities, but also to run my own less stress husbandry workshop, which I'm going to talk a little bit about. But Susan and I, along with the whole team at Understand Horses, had literally the most awesome time. I met a lot of people that I have seen on the internet for years, and it was finally fantastic to meet them. The amazing Robin Foster and Emma Lethbridge. These are people that I've looked up to for so long, and it was really great to actually meet them in person. There were some fantastic talks, really amazing. And the practical days, the Sunday, which was the practical day, was just fantastic. Difficult in some ways. Susan and I were doing presentations together on food, training with food, and how to introduce it with less stress, and then talking about mounting block and how you can do that, use food to do that. And it was tricky because some of the horses were a little bit nervous about being in the arena, and we saw some of those signs of the horses not being so comfortable. So I had to be careful who we worked with, and, you know, with due diligence to everything that we absolutely believe in at Understand Horses. Justine Harrison gave a fantastic talk and then a demo showing how horses show that frustration and worry about being in situations. So it would have been highly irresponsible for Susan and I to bowl on in there in the next presentation and say, yeah, you just ride over all that, you just ignore it. You know, if the horse comes in and they're a bit worried, hey, just carry on. That's not how we work. So it was interesting, because when you set up these clinics, demos, workshops, whatever you want to call them, you're totally led by the horse. You cannot be led by anything but the horse in that moment on that day. So it was pretty awesome to be able to say to people, well, we would have liked to done this, but we're not, because this horse isn't happy with it. To really walk the talk. You know, a lot of people talk the talk, but, you know, to be able to go out there and actually walk it felt really good. And even though things didn't go necessarily 100% to plan, I think there was so much to get out of it. The one thing I do know, and going forwards I have to be very mindful of, is that 45 minutes is nothing, and it just disappears, particularly in a practical. So it's about being aware of that, and, you know, trying to keep it nice and tight. But we're doing it all again next year, so please do follow the Understand Horses Facebook group, page rather, sorry, because you're going to find all the updates when they come through on next year's Understand Horses Live there. Really, come and join us. It will be even more awesome. This time we had Lauren Fraser join us by the fantastic means of the internet to give her presentation. I have a feeling we might actually be seeing her in person next year, which would be pretty awesome. Don't forget, you can listen back to Lauren on the podcast. I can't remember which number it was, but Lauren joined me on the podcast quite a few months ago now, probably even a year ago. So look back at that one and have a listen, because that was really good. She's so down to earth, Lauren. Well, everyone is. Understand Horses, everyone's very practical and sensible. And the amazing Rosa Verweis, bless her. It was such a tough day for her, because we were at Rittle Uni, and so, well, two days, but the practical day particularly, because she had to put out all her own things with Abby. They were doing enrichment, which took a lot of time to prepare, and she was also trying to keep an eye on how everything else was going. But it was really awesome, and a massive thank you to Justine Harrison and to David as well, her other half, because without them these things would just not happen. And it was awesome to feel part of that team. So do come and join us next time. The other thing that I wanted to talk about, and I would talk about this in a lot more depth, but maybe not on this podcast, but the thing I wanted to talk about was the over-reliance on positive reinforcement that I see in a lot of situations. When I hear somebody, you know, tell me about a case study they did, and a lot of it will be either target training or some sort of positive reinforcement training to solve a behavioural problem. And particularly when we're looking at husbandry, I think we have to be so careful that we aren't too narrow in our focus. With that in mind, in September at Nine Acres, Hazel Heaton's fantastic place, we looked at cooperative care, less stress care for horses and donkeys, because they have awesome donkeys there too. And we were looking at all the different techniques. Now, a lot of the people that were on that day have been on my positive reinforcement days previously. And so it was a little bit of a departure, looking at the other protocols that we can use, things like counter conditioning, desensitization, which is, you know, the brother, sister, everything of counter conditioning, habituation, which is so closely allied to desensitization, CAT techniques, a constructional approach technique, where we're using, in theory, some negative reinforcement protocols to deliver the reinforcer that the horse wants in that moment. And it was absolutely a fantastic day. We had Katie training with Tiff, who has never been able to spray with fly spray. Now, I know, and Katie knows, and she's done this for so long now, you don't have to spray your horse. So there are always management ways around these things. So sponging and, you know, using bottles that aren't as noisy, or, you know, lots of different ways, brushing on fly spray, but also thinking that this is quite a nice technique to work on, to see if you can get your horse really comfortable with a spray bottle. So we worked with counter conditioning, and it was so awesome that I got video back from Katie the following maybe week or so afterwards, saying, look at this, look how close I've got. I will share that. I'll share that on my Facebook group, Facebook page, sorry, and Instagram for you to see in the next few days. It was just fantastic to see the difference. And Katie works with her mum a lot, so that they are a great combination. And it's so easy to do something like the technique of, you know, open bar, closed bar, counter conditioning when you've got two people. So that was just one way that we were doing something for one horse, one pony and her carers. We were also looking at hoof handling, which was fantastic. And just looking at finding those baselines. Where does your horse react to the thing that you want to do to them? And that sounds a bit harsh, the thing you want to do to them, because of course you have your horse's best interests at heart. You want to pick their feet out because it's healthy. You want to, the farrier to be able to trim the hooves because it's good for your horse's welfare. So all these things are things that we need to do, but they are things that we ask the horse to have done to them. And they don't understand. They don't understand it's good for them. They don't understand that if their hooves get overgrown, they're going to be in trouble. So it's really down to us to make it as simple and straightforward as we can. And yes, of course, we can use positive reinforcement, but we can tweak things so well that it works even better. And we can use these other protocols. We don't have to rely on just clicking and giving food. In fact, I would say that majority of my behaviour consultations, when I'm changing behaviour, do not in any way rely on positive reinforcement training. Interestingly as well, if you join my coffee group, and you can find the link to that at trudydempseycard.co, which is where you'll see all my links to different areas of life. My coffee account is my Lead a Horse to Waters Buy Me a Coffee account, and there is a Trudy's Training group within that where I share literally my daily life with my animals, either students' animals, my own animals, thoughts, extra bits of podcast. It really is a great way to support the podcast and helps me to keep the podcast free and looking at things that are going to help a wide range of people. And I think that's really important. And that's another thing just to mention. If you can share this podcast, in other places, any of the episodes, it would be so useful, because the more people know about this stuff, the better. If we keep it narrow and just amongst ourselves, then nothing ever changes. We really need to dig in. Even if you think, oh, that's not so good, they're not doing it as well as I can do it, you need to get it out there. Don't be selfish. Don't hold on to these principles that you hold to close to your heart. You know, get them out there to other people. Anyway, if you join my Ko-fi account, which is £10 a month, and you get lots of inside information about my thoughts and training, you will see me training with my dogs, and particularly you'll see me training with cooperative care. And you'll also see how hard sometimes it is, how long it can take, that it doesn't just happen overnight. But there are some techniques, some protocols that can work really quickly for you, and they're not necessarily positive reinforcement. I think that's all I'm going to say right now about those things that happened in the summer. I had a fantastic time, super busy, a lot of clients, a lot of behaviour consults, and I'm really enjoying having this time to chill now and gather my thoughts. I wish that I'd been able to podcast straight after, because I had so many things in my head, but you know, we didn't. Should have done it driving home from Understand Horses, Susan and I, but we were so shattered that, you know, driving and getting home was more important than thinking about podcasting. So on now to some questions that people have asked me. And first of all, I want to say that if you want to get my take on how you train, come on a course with me. Really, really. I've just finished Improve Your Positive Reinforcement training at Understand Horses, and we had a brilliant bunch of people on there, some really geeky people who with whom it was fantastic to share information. It really was a joy to be able to meet with those people on Zoom, but also to see their training. Getting that feedback on your videos, I think, is really, really helpful, and the fact that you can see other people's feedback, that is really, really important, I think. My next one is in January. That's not my Improve Your Positive Reinforcement. That one is my coaching course, which I think is ideal for people who have come off the Improve Your Positive Reinforcement course, or it's great if you've been training with positive reinforcement, you're happy where you are, but you have a project that you'd like support with. And for £199 for 8 weeks of the course, the first 2 weeks really are planning and getting your data and deciding how you're going to train the behaviour that you choose, and then at least 6 solid weeks of training and Zoom meetings, and you can, you know, ask me any questions that you might have, and you can submit video as you go and get video feedback on your training. It's brilliant value, I think, and this time you can actually do that in 3 easy payments. But I would warn you, I think that is at least half sold out already. I like to keep the courses sort of 12 people, because if we go too heavy on people, then I can't give my personal support. So maximum 15, but more likely to be around 12. Don't forget, there will also be a scholarship place on that. Just before that as well, if you're listening to this in November 22, on, I think it's the 17th, Susan and I have our very first short course. There are no Zooms. It's all in the forum. And again, you can be an auditor or you can be a full-on trainee, and you can put video in. But it's fantastic value at £59 for the training place, or 29 for the auditor, and you get all the information, the videos that Susan and I have done with her horses, and you can see what we're talking about. And that one is all about training your horse to wait. It's a great one to do coming up to winter, because you don't need to do it in a big space, you don't need an arena, you can just do it where you are, where you find space, where you can get away from the wind and the rain, in the stable, in the yard, in a barn, wherever. So, you know, these are the ways to really get to grips, I think, with your training. I'm a little bit out there, I think, in some of the things that I think about training and the way I do things. So, sometimes just having that different eye on your training is going to be really helpful for you. So do come and join us. It would be great to have you. So on to the questions that I got posed. And the first one I'm going to title Brave Pants. And this was sent to me by the lovely Maya. And it's a really good question and one that I think a lot of us have. And she says that she's been told to put on her brave pants and get on with it and smile or sing or do whatever it takes to get her confidence high enough to match that of her horse. But she doesn't feel it. She's just not getting it. She's not feeling the love for the brave pants. And she's just saying, is it me? Does anybody else struggle with this idea of being brave for your horse? Am I a wuss? Am I a weakling? And do I need to toughen up and just get on and do things? And she's talking about doing things in hand. And she doesn't feel yet that she has the relationship with her horse to just take it out on walks. And people are telling her that she should be long reining out and doing things. And I think that's not really fair to her. I think it's almost a form of bullying when people push you beyond where you're comfortable. And yes, I know it's good sometimes to have a challenge, but not a challenge that terrifies you. Well, at least not in my book. I don't know how you feel about that. My advice when you are given the brave pants or equivalent, there are many ways. I mean, I'm being a bit unkind about the brave pants, but when somebody gives you the advice to kick on and get on with it, or stop faffing around and do it, I think for me with horses, one of the best ways of building your confidence is not taking a sharp intake of breath and getting on with it. It's learning about horse behavior. It's learning fantastic observational skills. It's all about building a common language between you and your horse. And normally when I take away the pressure on the trainer of you will be riding next week or you will be walking out next week, when you remove that pressure and you say, okay, let's just learn about how horses show their language and what that language might mean. And let's see how we can explain to them our language or a language that we will use with them. And let's be clear and let's be clean about that language so that the horse is never left confused, never doesn't know what to do, always can look to us for support. Then we start to see things that we might not have seen previously, mainly because we weren't looking. And often because we didn't have an open enough mind. And I think that's the crux of it for me, is about having a super open mind about these things. Knowing when your horse is saying no, that they're not taking the mick, rabbit ears around that one. They are purely saying, hey, I'm struggling with this right now. Now, whether that's fear, pain, discomfort, who knows? You need to find out though, because if you don't find out, if you don't do the work, if you don't put the training in, you never will. So instead of brave pants, for me, Maya, what I would like to see is that you go out there and build that relationship, build that common language by understanding your horse's language and creating one of your own together, so that there comes a day when I've taken away all the pressure by saying, you're not going to ride, you're not going to lead out, that it feels 100% natural to go out and ride or to go out and lead out and feel confident with it. Not because you were under pressure to put your brave pants on, but because just one day it felt like the most natural thing in the world to do. So I would say, don't let anyone bully you into feeling that you're not good enough and that you need to be good enough. Go and learn that language. Go and explore your horse and what your horse is telling you. And remember that your horse might not be telling you what you want to hear. And those are difficult conversations to have with your horse. Because ultimately, if it's a human being, they can respond to you and tell you why they're feeling a certain way. Well, horses do, but we sometimes would rather not hear it. And when we don't hear it, we are doing a disservice to that horse and to ourselves ultimately. So my advice is, don't worry about the brave pants. Don't worry that life is difficult for you with your horse right now. Unpick it, go back to the real basic stuff and start to see your horse for who they are and develop that and develop the language, and then your confidence will come. I'm not trying to say that people that offer confidence coaching aren't incredible. That is definitely a side of things that we can explore. But just purely saying, oh, get on with it, put your brave pants on, I don't think it's a good place to be. Anyone, if anyone else has any ideas on that, do let me know, because I'm always really interested to hear what your thoughts are and if you've come across that sort of situation yourself. Another question that I've been asked for this podcast was along the lines of, why does my horse keep mugging me? And this is from, and I'm not going to say their name because they didn't want me to, but this is not from somebody who is just starting out. This is from somebody that's been doing this for a long time, and they're really, really struggling not to have their horse keep being in the bag with their nose, nipping at their clothes, and just generally frustrated. And it breaks my heart sometimes that when I look on social media, particularly on Facebook, some of the clicker groups that I occasionally pop in and out of, very seldom do I have any time to write anything, but I do like to just touch base occasionally. But there are a lot of people doing things and not maybe admitting to how hard it is for them and not telling other people the pitfalls. If I could have a pound for every post that I read that everyone has started with a target, I think I won't be a millionaire, but I'll be I'd be quids in up to the thousands by now, because it is the advice that everyone gives. Just get your target, just start with targeting. And it fills me with dread, all these people out there that have taught their horse to target and they can't understand when they walk around with a target in their hand, even in their back pocket, and even with the bag on, that the whole thing has come to represent anxiety and frustration around how the food arrives. So I did actually send some personal advice to the person that posed this question, and I'm only going to generally answer it today because I've talked about it with Suze before. Fundamentally, we need to dig down into that reinforcement loop, the way we deliver the reinforcer. Forget it all being about the behavior. How do I get the behavior? How do I get the target touch or the walk on or the stand still? Forget that, because honestly, the most important part of any of that is, how is your horse going to get the reinforcer? How is that little routine going to play out? And that's where I start with every single behavior. Explain to my horse how the reinforcer is going to come. And the same with my dogs or any species that I'm going to be working with. It's like, how does the reinforcer come? Does it come from my hand to your mouth? Does it come from my hand to that bucket? Are we going to walk a couple of steps after I click and I feed you four steps ahead every single time? Am I going to have several markers? It's about being super clear and clean in all of that. And the other thing I think as well is that we often take our eye off the fact that the horse needs information. So if you ask your horse to do something and then you give it a blinking great long gap of 20 seconds, which I know doesn't sound like a lot, but believe me, in your horse's world, it is. And you don't give them any information. You don't ask them, could you stand there and wait for a second? You don't shape it. You don't do anything. You just think your horse can stand around for quite a few seconds with no information about how to get that valuable food reinforcer. That's always going to be a really, really hard one for a horse to deal with. So my advice is, get that reinforcement routine off pat. Really needs to be perfectly clean. It needs to be well practiced. Rehearse it before you do it with your horse, and then Rehearse it a lot with your horse before you even add the behaviour to the front of it. And give your horse information. Don't leave them standing there thinking, I know where the food is, and I know that previously I've done this to get it. They might be stepping back, they might be nuzzling the bag. All those behaviours can be so easily removed from the training by you being on your game. It's not about your horse. It's not misunderstanding from your horse's perspective. It's about you being on your game. So it's a tough one, sorry, but that one's down to you as a trainer. And I often read, the Holy Grail. It's about what reinforcer you use. So lower your rate, lower your value of reinforcer and your horse won't be so muggy. Sorry, that's a load of... I won't say the word because then I'm going to have to put adult content on it. But you know what I mean. That honestly, you can reduce the value of the reinforcer. And sometimes it's really useful too, because you don't want your horse to be anxious around the food. But it will not necessarily remove the problem. Then the other one of that holy trinity is the rate of reinforcement. Oh yeah, get up your rate of reinforcement. But eventually you're going to have to reduce that rate of reinforcement. You can be clicking every second and managing to throw food at your horse in that time. But that's not fundamentally the way forwards if your horse is still anxious. So I will use all of the Holy Trinity as part of a way to reduce anxiety. But they are not the only things that matter. And then timing, that's the other one that always comes in the three. Get your timing right. Yes, of course, timing your click right so that the horse knows what it was that they got right. Not having your hand hovering over your bag so that the horse is actually listening for the click rather than watching your hand. Those are all really important things. Yes, of course they are. Your mechanics being clean and tidy. But fundamentally, get that reinforcement routine right. Get it practiced and then you're good to go. Really, seriously. Work on that because it's going to make such a difference to your life. I finally want to have a little word about a super topic that came up in my Improve Your Reinforcement, Positive Reinforcement course recently. And a shout out to Sam, who is just an extraordinary person because she's great at pulling things apart. And I'm going to nag her to see if I can get her to come on the podcast, because she is really brilliant at teasing things apart in the theory department and then applying it to the practical side. So I give her a lot of support in terms of maybe you could try this, maybe you could try that. And then we pull it apart and say, well, why does that work? How does that fit into the theory? And so I think it's really, really great to have those relationships. One of the things that came up in the course was the idea of reward prediction error, which is absolutely the most interesting thing, I think, that is out there. When we talk about that holy trinity of reinforcement and the value of it, I mean, this is a super one for me really to think about. Now, if you want to get into the technicalities, and I will put the Schultz article, it's a study, it's massive. There are some more modern ones, so I put the most recent, easy to read one up for you, because honestly, I think it's the best one. But Schultz came up with his ideas on reward prediction error a long, long, long time ago. And when you think about it, it's what we are always looking at when we're training with horses. People often say to me, oh yeah, I give an extra big handful when I liked what the horse is doing. They'll also say, oh, I gave him the odd carrot amongst the chaff and because he really likes it. And I remember when I first started training with Becky, and she would have her bag of bits, which had all sorts of fantastic stuff in it, things like banana, which the horses really, really love. And I tried to, in a nice way, explain that, with reward prediction errors, it's really hard for your horse. If they thought they might get a banana and they end up with a handful of chaff, it's really not great. Remember, we are trying to influence the horse offering more behavior in the future. Reinforcing. If something's reinforcing, we are going to see more of that behavior in the future. With reward prediction error, it can be positive or negative, or you know, it can subtract from the value or it can enhance the value. So it's great if you only have one behavior and the horse thought it was going to get a handful of chaff and it got banana, and then you end, absolutely fine. That's lovely, because the horse thought it was getting a mouthful of chaff, it got banana. Wow, that's a heavy punching reinforcer. But if you carry on and the ones that you liked got banana and the ones you didn't like so much got chaff, you get this negative reward prediction error where the horse is disappointed. They thought they were getting better and they didn't. And I think it's something to be very aware of in your training, that if your horse is walking away, showing disinterest, less likely to be showing frustration, although that can happen too, then looking at that reward prediction error, thinking about, was my horse expecting more and did they not get it? So for me, I'm in a session when I found what suits a horse, I'm going to use that reinforcer. I will invariably check that frequently to see if that's the right reinforcer. Remember, we've got, you know, different grass throughout the year. We have horses who are more or less hungry. You know, being aware that your horse shouldn't be hungry when you're training with them. So really digging into that value of the reinforcer, but within the session, being consistent, giving a similar amount all the time and not changing the reinforcer within that, so that you don't get this negative effect where the horse actually thinks they were getting more and then they're disappointed. It was really interesting because this came to me again yesterday when I was sat in the hospital waiting to have my top-up vaccine. And it was interesting because my husband had been in earlier and Patrick said, oh yeah, he told me we had so-and-so last time and this time we've got this one, and you know, how long it would take and how, you know, gave him all the information and he told me. And so I went in and I'm sitting in line, about six people to go before me. So I can hear all the nurses because they've only got little screens around them, and I can hear the different nurses, and I can hear one guy and he talks his client through every moment of the vaccination situation. So he would say, I heard him three or four times at least say, okay, first of all, I have to find you in the system, and then he would tell them what their last vaccination was and what they would be getting on this occasion. He would then ask them to choose which arm, and he would ask them for their address and things like that, and he'd explain why he needed to do this, and he'd tell them about the symptoms that they might suffer when they get home and the fact that they should wait for 15 minutes in the car just to make sure, because any reactions that you have are going to happen pretty quickly after you've had the vaccine. So I've heard all this, as I say, three times, four times sitting there, and I go into mine and my nurse has nothing to say. Literally, I gave her the bit of paper with my name on it. She looked up my information, tap, 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 filled up the vial and then said, which arm? To which I said, left. She stuck it in. That was it. She didn't even tell me I could go. She just sat there tapping away again and looking indifferent. And it's so funny because I felt this absolute lack of anything. I felt let down almost, because I was expecting to go through, not that it was reinforcing to have this conversation, but it would have made me feel a bit more comfortable that my nurse was, you know, interacting with me in that way. And it instantly hit me, reward prediction error, because there I am expecting a certain level and I didn't get it. And how many times does that happen with a gift or, you know, Christmases? I always used to find Christmas terribly stressful. I hate giving gifts. I love giving gifts. Sorry, that's a silly thing to say. I love giving gifts, but I'm fraught with anxiety. Will they like it? Will it fit? Is it what they were expecting? I find it very, very upsetting giving gifts. And so I often end up not, because I just find it very stressful. So Christmas, you know, are you going to get what you want if you ask somebody for something? Is your husband a great shopper? No, mine isn't. I love him to bits, but honestly, his shopping skills are pretty average. So having had a child, it's fantastic that they can actually shop on his behalf, because it's very hard sometimes when your expectations are not met. Again, it's that reward prediction error. How does it make you feel when you didn't get what you were expecting? I'm not going to go into all the dopamine, but it's all about expectation. We know that. We know the dopamine isn't about the actual food. It's about the expectation. And then when we're disappointed, boom, it's like the bottom falls out of your world. And where do you go from there? And so you do find training with horses that are frustrated in that way and let down in that way. It can be really slow and really difficult. So have a think about that. Think about when you're training with your horse, are there any reward prediction errors? Are you thinking, I can just stroke my horse for this one? You know, I've clicked and I just stroke on this one. I'm not going to offer food. What does that say? I mean, there are a lot of techniques bound up in all this, and I don't have time to talk about each one of them right now. But just fundamentally, have a think about that before you get out with your horse. Am I being fair? Is my horse expecting certain things? And if he is and I let him down, what is his behaviour going to look like? And often it's not that pretty. Okay, that's it for now. There's so much more I can say about all these topics, but I just wanted to touch base again with you guys and to say that I'm so sorry that I haven't been podcasting, but I'm going to be on it now. And do keep safe and do your best through the winter to cope. I've got lots of courses coming up. Don't forget to check in with my card, Trudy Dempsey, all one word. And don't forget, card has got two R's in it, and it's card.co. And there you can find all the links to my website, to Understand Horses courses, to my IAABC course, which is looking at pain and discomfort and deciding whether some behaviours that you're seeing in your horse could be related to that. We look at the amazing ethograms that are out there that talk us through pain and discomfort with horses. I discuss a lot of my own cases, and of course you can bring your own cases to the course if you wish to, but all the links to that are through my card, and I'll put that link in the show notes. Until next time, have a fantastic time with your horses and take care. I'm Trudy Dempsey, and you've been listening to Lead a Horse to Water. Thank you for listening, and don't forget, please share the podcast in as many places as you can. See you on the next one.